Our final speaker is a web designer. He's also a publisher. I'm guessing many of you have come across his Eight Faces book, where he interviews all sorts of people, type designers, web designers. And hopefully Elliot is going to finish off giving us perhaps a bright future for how us as web designers at least can move typography forward. Elliot J. Stocks.
Hello everyone, thanks for having me. Thank you, Rich. Going along with the theme of prizes and stuff, I'm going to have a little quiz with my talk as well. So I have the latest issue of the now sold-out Eight Faces available here. It looks more interesting now that it's just in a box. And I also have the latest Smashing book, which Vitaly sent me 10 of these, and I need to get rid of them somehow. So it seemed like a good opportunity. So as Rich said, hopefully... Well, we're going to be talking about where type is on the web now, looking to the future, and really trying to spread the message that if we use future-facing CSS now, then we're going to get better web typography sooner, basically. So I've done quite a few talks that tend to revolve around this message of pushing things forward and trying the latest CSS methods and not worrying too much if things break horribly in IE. And I want to continue along that track, but specifically with some of the cool OpenType features that we can now start using. And actually, support is surprisingly good for some stuff. So just to give you a bit of an intro first, as Rich said, you might know me from Eight Faces, which is this typography magazine that I produced. And I started doing it purely as a selfish thing because, as Rich said, I'm primarily a web designer. I got absolutely sick of seeing my work vanish after, you know, a year or months or maybe even only a few weeks. You know, the web is so ephemeral and it all just disappears so quickly. So I wanted to make something that could actually last. Purely selfishly, I just wanted to make something I could have on my bookshelf. And it turned out okay. People liked it and it got pretty popular. We do two a year. And it's really exciting and it's just great doing a print project. It's just such a lovely... way to get away from browser bugs and all sorts of things like that, and it's just lots of fun. So Eight Faces was really interesting from that point of view, but what I also found was that when I went back to doing web design work, every time after I'd finished an issue of Eight Faces, I was kind of looking at things differently. My eyes have been opened to all of the things you can do with type in the printed world. And because of that, I kind of felt a little bit frustrated in a way because of how limited we were on the web. But I've been trying to push things forward and see what we can actually do, because, as I said, it's fairly surprising how good some of this OpenType support is. Anyway, here's a few of our back issues. And if you haven't heard of the magazine, hopefully you've heard of some of the people in it. Hopefully you'll recognize these faces. It's Doug, it's Jason, Veronica, and Jose, and Eve, who was speaking earlier. So you can see that we, you know, like to get... quite a few decent people from the world of fonts. And there's another guy as well that we have involved, and he sort of does proofreading and fact-checking and stuff like that. I'm not sure exactly who he is. Apparently he likes fonts or something, but he looks like this. Sadly not here today. Actually, I kind of feel a bit bad. It feels like a kind of a mean joke now. It wasn't a mean joke, really. Anyway, Eric does help us out massively doing our stuff, so that's cool. So the reason I'm talking about Eight Faces, like I said, it's my own journey from web to print and then back to web again. It's not just to plug that the new issue is out in 4 weeks. So hopefully you've heard of this guy, a friend of mine called Trent Walton. He lives in Texas, and he has been doing some very interesting things with type for quite some time. Trent tends to focus on a lot of the... new CSS features and using things like a lot of textures and animations and masks and things like this. And I must admit, when Rich asked me to come and talk, I was a little bit worried to begin with that my talk would basically just be me standing here showing loads of slides of Trent Walton's site. But because Trent is doing some really, really amazing stuff. But so to try and get away from just showing Trent's stuff the whole time, I, as I said, it's going to be speaking specifically about some of the OpenType features rather than other kind of presentational CSS stuff. So I've been doing some experiments. You might see them on the blog. Oh, hang on. Before I get to that, this is another one that Trent did where this like a sort of accordion effect, as you can see. And Russ, I can't ever remember how to say Russ's name. Mashmeyer, I think. Meyer, Mashmeyer. He's Jessica Hish's fiance. He did this for the Typekit blog. And it's cool because he took Trent's post that you saw in the previous slide, and he actually made this kind of quite fun, responsive thing. So you can't see it here, but do go and have a play around with it. I've made a nice little bit.ly URL for the actual Typekit post. bit.ly/rusttype. And it's on strangenative.com/foldup. And it's really cool because it's all responsive. So you pull out your browser really wide, and you can hardly see these kind of cards, as it were, and you can squish them up. And it's quite fun. It's really nice. It's completely useless, of course, but it's a nice kind of proof of concept. So a lot of this cool stuff that Trent has been doing, and that I've been doing recently as well, relies very heavily on this little jQuery plugin called Lettering.js. It was created by Dave Rupert, who works with Trent. And the idea, who's familiar with Lettering.js before I start explaining? I don't need to explain it, it's fine. It's brilliant. So if you haven't heard, very quickly, if you haven't heard what Lettering.js is, it's just a little bit of JavaScript that enables you, it will automatically wrap spans around words or letters so that you can do proper manual kerning, you can style different words, different letters differently. Very, very cool. Another tool that Dave created for Trent and then the rest of the world to enjoy is FitText, which is on fittextjs.com. If you're not familiar with this, this basically allows your type to... It's a way of making type act like images when you have image set to width of 100%. So if you have 100% and you've got nice fluid design and it's all moving like that, you kind of don't want your type to start wrapping because whatever lovely design you've done with your type can then start going onto the next line and looking awful. So it treats it almost like it's an image and actually kind of scales it proportionally, which is really, really cool. And I've been putting it to use on some recent blog posts that I've been doing on my site. So this is just how text looks by default on a header on my blog at the moment. Ignore that, what it actually says. There's nothing to do with what I'm talking about. But basically, there's Lettering.js is there, but not really doing anything. FitText is there, so that it kind of scales proportionally with the rest of the page. But other than that, it's fairly plain. That's just the default style with the set in Scholar there. But what I'm going to show you is how I've then taken some treatments and added it to those titles so that the titles are more visually interesting. But not just more visually interesting, that they are experimenting with a particular type of OpenType feature that we're trying to kind of get out there. And some work, and some look okay, and some don't. So this is the crux of it now. This is what I'm going to take you through. A little bit about ligatures, small caps and all-star numerals using subsets, swashes, and then getting onto style sets. And I'm going to summarize that and then show you something cool that the Typecast guys have given me to show you. So let's start off with the ligature, the fine flourish of the ligature. Here's the title from the blog post I did on this, which you can find on this URL. Now this is actual live web type, selectable, copyable, everything like that. And you should hopefully see that there is the we have an FI, an FL ligature, and the slightly lesser known TH ligature there. Set on in Caslon, and that's served via Typekit, and that is being rendered on Chrome on a Mac. Ligatures are pretty well supported, actually. The latest versions of Chrome, Safari, Firefox all support ligatures on a Mac. On Windows, it's a little bit different. Chrome and Safari support is pretty good. I did a few tests in Browser Stack and got some results that I wasn't expecting, stuff where I was expecting to see them working on some browsers and they weren't. And this is, I couldn't see support for Firefox or IE, but I'm not sure about this. This is something we can need to continually test. And this weirdness that I was getting with ligatures, I'd find that sometimes it'd be on the title ligatures would be kicking okay, but it wouldn't be kicking on the body text, or vice versa. Or it was happening on Firefox on a Mac, and it wasn't happening on Firefox on Windows. All these kind of things. really summarize the state of where we are with all this experimental stuff at the moment. And it is frustrating because basically you have to just keep testing. And I was considering doing a little chart which outlined exact browser support for everything, for all these different features. And then thought, actually, it's kind of pointless because it's changing so quickly, so dramatically across different browsers, across different systems, that really you just need to test and look and see what is actually working. And if it's not working, does it matter? I mean, maybe in the case of ligatures, it's not the end of the world. With some of the other things, it has a bigger drawback if these things aren't working. So basically, with ligatures, we are fairly well covered, which is quite cool. And this is how it happens. Now, I didn't want to get too much into having code examples on screen. I'm not a huge fan of them. But the thing is that when we're talking about this kind of stuff, we need to see some of the code behind it. So this is something you might be familiar with, a fairly standard way of turning on ligatures and kerning, which is on by default in Firefox and in Chrome, actually, which I didn't realize until recently. But we want a bit more control over that. And some of the newer features allow us to have a little bit more control. So this is the spec for the CSS fonts module. I don't know if you've ever tried to read a W3C spec. It's pretty heavy going. I was reading one. I was reading a different draft of this. And so I did this talk, or a version of it, 3 or 4 weeks ago at Typo Berlin. And I was doing some last-minute prep the day before. I was sitting in this little cafe in Berlin just going through and making a few corrections and whatnot. And I looked at the spec again and really freaked out because the date, you can see the date there, that was the 18th of May. Well, I was talking on the 19th of May. So I was like, oh, no, don't change it now. Not like, wait, at least wait a day. It doesn't matter. But yeah, so I started to get very worried about what was changing, what was new. And as I said, it updates very, very frequently. In the end, I realized to not worry too much about it. These things do change. But the key thing is if you're testing across multiple browsers, then it doesn't necessarily matter. And the key thing about the spec really is this is more about what's planned for the future. This is how the ideas are progressing for what we will be doing in, you know, maybe a year's time or a few years' time in some cases. But it's actually they're actually a little bit easier to read than they used to be, so it is worth having a look at that. So this demonstrates actually how quickly some of it changes. So this is the proposal using font variant ligatures. You switch on common ligatures, you know, the standard FIFL, etc., and then use discretionary ligatures to switch on discretionary ligatures, which makes a lot of sense. Now, until recently, that was proposed to be additional ligatures, and that's one of the bits that had actually changed, that they've now decided to say discretionary ligatures, which makes much more sense, because they're the words that we actually use. Nasty big block of code here, but it all says the same thing. I posted this on, when I first did this post, on my blog, and got corrected by a commenter who said that the Mozilla syntax, the top one, which is the current one, was actually being replaced. So as of from Firefox 15 going forward, try saying that when you're drunk, you'll have the standardized way of writing it. So you'll see that the Mozilla, the Microsoft Opera, and WebKit all use basically the same syntax, which is great, which is really cool. So the Firefox one, the previous one, is there just for a bit of safety for current versions. So the downside is that some browsers, like the current version of Safari, still require text rendering optimized legibility to turn on ligatures. So which is kind of a bit of a shame, but this is where it's going. This font feature settings allows us to have a little bit more control over things rather than just kind of turning it on exactly. And I'll get to this. This font feature settings is in these other examples that I will show you. So the key thing to remember here and throughout all of these examples is that not all fonts are created equal. So even if you say, right, I've got this this code, this CSS that I'm going to put in, you're going to put that into your site, doesn't necessarily mean that ligatures are going to appear. The display is completely dependent on the font file itself containing those ligatures. So if you're in Typekit and you're getting ready to export your kit, you'll notice that there's an option to choose whether you want to export all characters. And if you do that, then if that particular font does have ligatures, then that is the way that you say, yes, I want these included in this font. If you don't do that, then they're not going to appear. Unfortunately, checking that option does then mean that the font size is going to increase, and sometimes it can be quite a bit. So again, you've got to weigh up the pros and cons with this. Typekit's version of Scholar, which is the body face that I use on my site, doesn't contain ligatures, but the version on FontDeck does, which is why I'm serving all of the body type through FontDeck's version of Scholar. I got some people complaining about how some of these things render on Linux. Apparently there's a lot of inconsistencies, especially on Chromium. But hey, Linux, hey. Not really. So I'm going to talk to you now a little bit about subsets. So this is another title for the next post that I did in the series. And if you have a look at, it says CSS and 123, have a look at them. CSS is set there in true small caps. And 123, old style numerals. Now this is Magneta. Again, it's rendered on the Mac version of Chrome, and that this particular font is being served by FontDeck. But these are true, as I said, these are not kind of fake small caps. It's not being faked in any way. So this is what we kind of had, this font variant small caps. You might be familiar with this. It never really worked that well. This is where it's going, using actually instead font variant small caps. This is what I want to use. Eve, in his talk, spoke a little bit about how people faked small caps by getting shrinking the size down, but then you had all those troubles with the type actually looking thinner than everything else, a bit lighter than everything else. So this is a way to achieve true small caps. And this is what's proposed for the CSS3 fonts module. And very similarly for old style numerals here. So font variant numeric, and then you declare the type of numerals that you want. This is all where it's going. However, these methods are not the ones that are displaying this type here on this post. So this one, for this I'm actually using subsets. Now the word's cropped up a few times today. And the really interesting thing about subsets is that there's something that we're kind of treating almost as new in a way, especially from web type, but they've been around for a long time. Prior to OpenType, you had to have a separate font file that contained your small caps or your old style numerals, whatever. So we're just looking back to the past and taking those principles and basically creating a polyfill. So FontDeck, for instance, have what they call expert subsets, the expert subset essentially says that this font file contains only these characters. It will contain only, for instance, old style numerals. It will contain only small caps. And you can choose to serve that up. So what I'm doing here is saying that here's the expert subset as the main family. It then falls back to the standard Magneta thin family. And then obviously your standard fallbacks there. And those spans, by the way, are the ones that are just generated automatically by lettering.js. So it's quite cool. You're kind of relying on an old method. It's kind of a little bit of a kind of hacking in a way, but it's a nice way of polyfilling stuff until support gets a little bit better. And what's interesting as well, if you continue thinking along the line of subsets, is that people like Trent, for instance, has been doing a similar thing by actually putting some icons, actually making an icon font, putting it into a font file and then having that there. And that's actually a subset. So you can kind of make a subset of anything, really. I mean, it depends how dirty you want to get with your font files. But it's quite a nice way of adding this stuff in now. So as we get to swashes, here is the title with the swashes in there. And this is actor poster italic. And the swash characters, so the S, the W, and then the S again, are actor poster swashes. Now they're served via Typekit, and they are served via a subset. And the subset there is not, Typekit don't call them expert subsets or whatever, and they don't necessarily have such a kind of standardized way of doing it in the way that FontDeck do, but just some fonts over there, they have special subsets for them. So this is how I achieve this one with the swashes. So again, there are some challenges that we face. Does the typeface itself, the actual design, contain those swashes? Does it have those glyphs? And does that particular version of the font from that particular font delivery service have those in there as well? And if it's an option, have we chosen to export all of the available characters to make sure that they are getting pushed out there? Here you can see on Fontdex site, this bit highlighted here is these extra tags that have, say, these are the open type features that we have. Sadly, there aren't many web fonts out there right now that do contain swashes and lots of these other features, and a lot of web font services don't necessarily categorize them. And the thing that you'll see going through this is that we kind of need to know a lot of these things in advance. So here with Fontdex, adding these tags, which is obviously a very time-consuming, laborious process, the more that people start doing that, the more we as designers can look at that straight away and say, it's got ligatures, it's got swashes, fantastic, we're going to do some cool stuff with this. The ampersand site has got a really neat little trick in it, a nice little polyfill. So the swashes that are on the final character in each person's name are generated so that they have this. It's basically a really, really clever polyfill. So if the browser supports the swashes natively, they'll be displayed. If it doesn't, a clever little bit of JavaScript writes in a little bit of code that says, use the subset instead, which is really, really cool. Very, very clever. Nice way of ensuring support across the board right now. So let's activate some swashes the proper way. So here's a bit of code. Again, we're going back to font feature settings, this kind of godsend of allowing us to have extra control over type and available today to some degree. So this in this code, for instance, is saying, again, we've got the extra stuff of Firefox 15 in there. You're saying, use the second swash character. That's what that 2 represents. It might be that there's only one swash character, so it'd be a 1. It might be that there are 10. Again, this is varying from typeface to typeface, from font to font, so you kind of need to know that stuff in advance. So, as I said, you need to test all of this, and some stuff will work and some stuff won't at all. So, as I said, we're kind of wading into the waters of talking about style sets now. Specific different sets of characters. Oh, sorry, before I get onto that, this is just a brief thing that's only supported in WebKit right now that shows you the stroke. Let me just nip back to the example. So you'll see that there's a very tiny little 1 pixel stroke just around the type there. You can see it best where the Y intersects with the W. And that is fairly nice, little neat little trick. It's only in WebKit at the moment. If it's not supported, it's not supported, not the end of the world. But the only downside about using that is you kind of only want to use it 1 pixel width, because any more than that, and it will eat into the type. So you know with Illustrator you have, if you want to choose where your stroke is, it's either inside, outside, or centered. This just is kind of, you can't choose any of those options here. So if you have like a 10-pixel one, it will go outside and it will go inside and make the type look a bit horrible, unless that's what you're going for. So just something to bear in mind. Nothing to do with OpenType or whatever, just a fun little feature. So here we are, style sets. So here, if you look at the nonsensical word on the left, this is using Brie from TypeTogether, who you saw talk earlier on. Now, Brie's a really funny one. I was using it a couple of years ago in the branding exercise, and I came up against this issue where everybody loved it the way it looked everywhere, and then they were a little bit funny when they saw the Z. They felt that the Z was maybe a little bit too playful, a little bit too much character in there, kind of distracting. So, well, the really cool thing about Brie is that there is an alternate style set in there where you can say, well, let's use the alternate Z, or let's use the alternate Q or A or any of these things. And you'll see, actually, if you look at the bottom line, this Q, A, E, G, K, blah, 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 the bottom line is a lot more, you know, it's a bit more reserved. It's not quite as playful and colorful as the top line. So this is really handy, because here we have Veronica and Jose saying, maybe this isn't the ideal situation for every single scenario, so here are a few alternatives. So we can do this by using style sets. But again, that's the URL there if you want to go and have a look at that. Now this one, It really pained me to do so, but this is actually rendered on Firefox and the Mac, which I believe is currently the only Mac browser, at least, that supports style sets natively. Now, I could have got around this with the subset. I was really, really tempted. I could just, I'll just throw a subset in there, it'll be fine. But the trouble with that is that the previous two posts I'd done were relying on subsets, and I just felt that hacking away again for like a third post felt a bit like cheating. I felt that I should really kind of say, practice what I'm preaching and say, you know, we're going to have these, if you're going to be truly future-facing, you've got to take a few risks. It's going to look a bit dodgy on some browsers. So natively at the moment, Firefox on the Mac does support it, which is the screen grab you see. I don't really like the way Firefox renders a lot of type. It seems to mess with the M square quite a bit, so you get some slightly weird inconsistencies with line height and whatnot. But you know, we can live with it for now. The new version of Mountain Lion, the new version of OS X, which is coming out fairly soon. Safari 6 there, I believe, might support style sets. I need to double check that, but I think that there is going to be support there. In fact, Safari 6 on the whole should introduce a better support for some of these open type features, which is quite cool. So here's our future proof code for inserting using our style sets. Again, font feature settings, fairly straightforward. And here we're saying use style set 1. That's it, nice and easy. If it contains it, then we'll use it. This is the way you do it. Fairly straightforward. And what's nice about it is that this SS01 and whatnot, it's future proof and it follows traditional open type table conventions. So in the far flung future, this is the proposal for how things will go. So when font variant alternates is properly implemented across all the browsers, we're going to get these more robust tools. And this code here describes what to do when a style set isn't available, or sorry, when the particular, if a different font is being used. So here we're naming a style set as whatever name you want. Here it's Swash-like. I'm using Rich's example here. And then if you're using Brie, then it applies this style set, called Swash-like. And then if Brie isn't rendered for whatever reason, if another fallback happens, then it totally ignores that. So this is a more robust way of saying, yes, we want to use a style set, that's pretty cool, but we only want to use it if Brie is actually being displayed. So to summarize our open type features, first of all, we need to consider the typeface. So does the actual typeface, the actual design itself, contain swashes, ligatures, other open type features that we want to use? We need to consider the actual font file. Is it actually an open type file that's being served? I was having a conversation with Rich, and he told me that there are some services that they're just actually not serving an open type file. So there's no hope in hell that any of those features are going to be in there, because the file itself just physically doesn't contain them. There's nothing you can do about it. Now, even if those things are in there, they're in the file, are those extra glyphs included? Have you chosen to check this option in TypeKit or whatever where you're saying include all of these characters? Do you need to adjust any other settings to export other ones? Have you got the actual code in there as well? We need to consider the browser. So which feature does it support? It might support a little bit of one and not much of the others. You can't say that it would just support all of these open type features. We need to keep testing. So it can differ massively between different versions of the browser. Different version numbers, what was supported in one won't necessarily be in two. And this can vary, obviously, across operating systems as well. Do we decide to create a polyfill of some sort to add some of those special characters rather than relying on those open type features being supported? And most importantly, we need to consider the user, of course. So will the design break if certain open type features are missing? Does the type actually look that good? So for instance, if ligatures are missing, maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe that's not such a huge deal. But perhaps in the case I had where the style set of Brie is not available, then maybe the client doesn't want to have the cool Z with the curly bits. And then you have to consider that. That is actually a consideration that could possibly mar the experience for someone if they didn't want to have that feature in there. Now, even generous feature support is unfortunately subject to poor type rendering on some operating systems. No names mentioned. So a theme that's been running through what I've been saying is that we need to keep testing stuff. And right now, although it's really exciting that we're getting all these new features in the browser and whatnot, we don't actually have that many tools to really test and see what are available. So I'm just going to show you a few of them. And the big thing is that I want to show you the example from the Typecast guys. So who's heard of Typecast? You've been chatting to the guys outside? Cool, everyone has. It's an amazing tool, really, really cool. If you haven't, there's the URL. And Typecast is brilliant because it allows you to design in the browser, to focus on not the bigger picture design, but to really focus on the type. So when I did Smashing Magazine, one of the first things we did was actually start designing just the article, like the real fine details, without worrying about all of the other stuff to begin with, just so we could get the type right to begin with. And it would have been really handy to try out Typecast then. I mean, actually, Typecast did exist then, but it's much more feature-packed now. So these are just a few quick screen grabs of some features which have just gone live on Typecast. When these guys, when we were talking about this, and they showed me some of this OpenType stuff, I said, oh, that's really cool. I really would love to put it in the talk. And then since doing the talk in Berlin a few weeks ago, and then coming here, they have actually gone live in the last week, which is pretty cool. So get on Typecast and try them out. So here in this screen, if you sort of follow the cursor in the top left there, we're choosing a typeface, and here's our choices, and we can now filter. You can see that there's the different font services up there. So we've got Typekit, Google Web Fonts, Font Deck, and what looks like Facebook, but is actually fonts.com. And God, imagine if Facebook started doing fonts, that would be horrible. So we're choosing Bello Pro. Oh, sorry, so we're going to tick this open type box. You might need to squint, but we're going to filter by open type. And now we can see which fonts we have, which have open type features available. There's a little OTF there just on the right you can see. It's an OTF, not a WTF, don't know what that would be. But we're choosing Bello Pro. And here, you see it's now had the effect of going into that type there and setting it in that. We're now hovering over this feature, which is quite cool. So you can see that we've got ligatures turned on, and now we're hovering over the next icon, and it says discretionary ligatures. So you can actually then, let's put them on, and there you see the S and the T joins. We now have that discretionary ligand there, which is pretty cool. It's a little info box, which just shows you that these are experimental features. And this is it with the discretionary ligatures grayed out. So that's based, I believe, on the browser. So you could be checking this on a browser that doesn't support discretionary ligatures. And you know that they're in there. You know that the font file contains them. But the particular browser that you're viewing on won't render them. And that's really, really useful information to know. Because you're designing, and here you know, you're designing early stages stuff. You're starting from the type first. You're working outwards. And straight away, you've got a service saying, well, in this particular file, they're there, but if your users are mainly going to be on this version of IE or whatever, you're not going to see them. Really, really useful feedback to have. And there we go. That's just the hover over demonstrating that. So we're always quick to bash Microsoft, but we shouldn't really, because they've done some really great stuff for type. And this site that's up there now, have I got URL? I have, yes. So this OpenType testing site is actually pretty cool. Well, this is really boring looking, but if you click on the examples, they're quite nice. There's one that Font did with showing a variety of their typefaces, and it allows you to kind of check, you know, do you want to see it with small caps? Do you want to see it with discretionary ligs and stuff like that? And you see it change in real time, and that's actually really cool. It works quite well for them as a sort of marketing thing to show that their fonts contain this stuff as well, but it's quite pretty. Now, the really exciting thing. Oh, yeah, by the way, this is kind of an IE10 promotion site, so it's more geared towards what features IE10 supports. Now, this other one, which doesn't really look that sexy, but is really cool. So Chris Armstrong from Typecast showed me this a couple of days ago. So this has just been put in. and have a look at bit.ly/ot_feature_test. That's the quick link to get to this quite obscure link that it's actually on. What this is, again, doesn't look very exciting, but this guy has created a font which, as you'll see, its characters resemble the icons used to indicate which features are present in the typeface. But what it's cool is that it's nothing to do with the font itself. It tests your browser. So you can go onto this website and suddenly see which OpenType features your browser supports. So nothing to do with this actual font itself. You don't need to worry about that. If you're just thinking, OK, I'm on Safari, I'm on version 5, I wonder, you know, I'm going to move over to version 6, what's the difference here? This site will tell you. Again, doesn't look that cool, but that's a really, really handy resource to have. And I think this is really important. There are so many great new features for us to play with. Some work fantastically well. Some will make your site look like ours. But I do think it is important to keep testing, to kind of push the boundaries, to design stuff that is on the bleeding edge so that browser vendors feel compelled to add support. For, you know, they say, oh, wow, everyone is using this stuff. You know, it is actually in there. We should add better support for it. To continually push things forward. And it's really exciting. I always say that now is an exciting time to work on the web. But it is. I feel like now, especially with Type, some really, really good stuff is happening. But there is some frustration with that. There is this uncertainty. There's this element of you have to know some stuff first. So tools like this, or the tagging, for instance, in FontDeck, where it says, you know, here's the open type features we have, that's so useful for us because as designers, we can look at something and instantly know, okay, we can do some really cool stuff with this. But the rule of thumb is to just keep testing and testing and testing again and then just kind of weeping silently in the corner when it still doesn't work and then just test a little bit more. That's it. Thank you very much.